other day, one of my nieces, who's a nurse, who's married to my nephew, the doctor, shared a post on Facebook that caught my interest. It was a post from a pediatrician on homeschooling. It was about why more doctors and lawyers and other professionals are choosing to homeschool their children. I know we have a lot of doctors and lawyers and other professionals among our listeners right now, so we thought we would run this one by you. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April 1st. No matter your profession, do you homeschool your children, or do you know someone who does? Do you think it's a good option for parents or not, and why or why not? And what is your image of the homeschooler? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Kathleen Burchillman. She is a pediatrician at the St. Louis Children's Hospital at Washington University School of Medicine. She is co-founder of ChildrensMomDocs.org, a pediatrics blog affiliated with the St. Louis Children's Hospital. Her recent blog post, 18 Reasons Why Doctors and Lawyers Homeschool Their Children, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what prompted you to write this blog post?
You know, I started homeschooling my children, or I should say we, because homeschooling in our home is really a joint effort between my husband and I. We started homeschooling about a year ago, and I didn't tell any of my colleagues at work that we were homeschooling, and that's a really complex issue. But I finally felt the need to come out of the closet, if you will, as a homeschooler. I felt like I had to go public with this reality that I was homeschooling, and I wanted the opportunity to really explain myself in a detailed way as to why we chose homeschooling.
Why did you keep homeschooling a secret from your colleagues?
Well, you know, I work in academic medicine, and we are expected to make an academic contribution to our work, to our career. And so I have a clinically scheduled hours, but my academic time is unscheduled. And there's an idea that if you engage in other significant time-consuming hobbies or pastimes in your life, that you may not be really committed to your academic career. And it's sort of an unstated, sort of subtle thing in academic medicine. And I felt that if people found out I was homeschooling, that there would be a sort of discrimination academically against me, that I couldn't possibly be committed to my academic career.
Well, what surprised you the most when you went to your first information homeschooling meeting?
Well, I always thought of homeschoolers as people who made this choice primarily for ideological reasons. Now, that's a total stereotype that is not even statistically accurate. I want to be really clear about that. In fact, only 36% of homeschoolers state that the desire to teach religion and morality in the home was a primary motivator for their choice to homeschool. So actually 73% of people who choose homeschooling cite dissatisfaction with the public school system. So ideologues, or people who are homeschooling out of a desire to focus on a certain ideology in their children's education, are actually a minority of homeschoolers. But I didn't understand that. So when I went to this homeschool or parent organization meeting last spring, my husband and I were kind of like nervous, and we snuck in the back and were real quiet, and we were, you know, waiting to see what interesting people arrived. But actually, we found that they were people just like us. There were mostly doctors and lawyers, and a lot of college professors and former public school teachers, and then a bunch of small business owners and a variety of other people. And most of them were there for the same reason we were, that they wanted to give their children the best education possible, and that they had found homeschooling to be the best way to do that.
Well, I guess I had the same impression to some extent as you did, a stereotype, but I always thought that the typical homeschooler was maybe a stay-at-home mom or someone who didn't like the way the public schools were treating religious topics. But I didn't expect that there'd be a lot of doctors and lawyers and other professionals among the group, because I figured maybe you would send your kids to a private school if you were dissatisfied with the public school.
Yeah, and about a generation ago, I think that was very true, especially here in St. Louis, where I live. The private and parochial school systems are very popular and very well-developed. And most people of that professional, economic, upper-middle-class socioeconomic level do choose the private school system. And we had actually, we did that too. We followed this traditional path. We bought our home in what we thought was the best public school system, and our elementary school is a blue ribbon public school, and we visited schools, and we decided that we loved this school best, and that's where we bought the home we did. And then we were dissatisfied with that public school. So then we tried a private school, and we liked it a little better, but we realized that we have four children, we're expecting our fifth, that no school, public or private, would be able to meet the diverse educational needs of all of our children better than we could. And that's ultimately why we chose homeschooling. Now, a generation ago, homeschooling really wasn't as well developed as it is now. There really weren't the educational options that we have. We have so many homeschool co-ops and classes and activities that our children can partake in. And we shouldn't underestimate the important role of online media for homeschooling. Almost all homeschoolers are augmenting their kids' education with online videos through things like Khan Academy and adaptive learning through programs such as Dreambox, which is a math adaptive learning company. And so with the online opportunities, which get more and more advanced as kids get older, homeschooling is really becoming a great option. It's important to note that most of the major colleges now, such as MIT and I understand Princeton and Harvard too, have online programs where you can actually take most of their courses, including most of their introductory courses, in their entirety online for free. But you don't get a grade. So it's called MITx. So as your kids get older and into middle school and high school and want to study these advanced concepts, they really can get a world-class education for free from home. But all these things take time. And if your kids are in a public or a private school, chances are they're just not going to have the opportunity in terms of their time to pursue these options.
We are talking with Dr. Kathleen Birchelman, a pediatrician at St. Louis Children's Hospital at Washington University School of Medicine. We are talking about her recent blog, 18 Reasons Why Doctors and Lawyers Homeschool Their Children. And we'll get into some of those reasons in just a moment. And we'll wonder if you homeschool your children and why or why not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's going to be a partly cloudy, cold day today with scattered light snow in northern Wisconsin. No joking. A high today around 30 degrees. Clear and cold tonight, lows in the teens and low 20s. And tomorrow, mostly sunny. Enough clouds in the north tomorrow for another chance of light snow. Don't worry, spring will come sometime. Highs tomorrow, mid-30s to around 40. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April 1st. Coming up this afternoon after 3 o'clock during At Issue with John Munson, what role do women play in the White House? John and his guest will discuss the relationship between gender, popular culture, and the presidency, and discuss the possibility of a female U.S. president. That's after 3 during At Issue. Right now, we are talking about why some parents homeschool their children. And we'll talk more about the benefits of a home education, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions. And we'll wonder if you are a supporter or a critic of homeschooling. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Kathleen Birchelman. That's right. She is an MD, a pediatrician at the St. Louis Children's Hospital at Washington University School of Medicine. She wrote a recent blog post on childrensmomdocs.org entitled 18 Reasons Why Doctors and Lawyers Homeschool Their Children. And you can find that linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Dr. Birchelman, I thought that maybe somebody with a busy career, professional doctors and lawyers and others, wouldn't have time to be homeschooling their children. How do you find the time?
You know, it took several years for us to be able to adjust our family time management to integrate homeschooling into our lives. But I think the key point here is that homeschooling it does not take very, very many hours out of your day. And for our family, we actually save time every day homeschooling than we used to spend with our kids in school. And, the issue of time was very important to me because of what I mentioned previously, that I feared a sort of discrimination from the academic community, that I would somehow not be committed to my academic career because I was homeschooling. And I have a very hard time convincing people that actually our family's time management is so much easier, incredibly easier, now that our kids are not in school. You know, we spent more time driving last year mm-hmm. for school drop-off and pick-up than we do this year homeschooling. We had four children, and last year they were in four locations, if you include our newborn at home. And with the toddler in preschool and the other two in two different schools, we found that drop-off and pick-up every day was about 4 hours of driving total. Plus, you have the morning time of making lunches and getting backpacks packed and kids up and dressed. And then you have the evening time with homework. But with homeschooling, I spent about 4 hours a day homeschooling, and there was no homework, no packing up your backpack and then unpacking it in the afternoon, and no packing bag lunches, et cetera. And overall, our family stress level and our family time together got so much better.
So the kids get 4 hours of classroom time at home?
That's right. They're about 4 hours of individual instruction. It's augmented after that with independent reading and online math.
We have a number of callers. We'll get into more of your 18 reasons as we go along. Steve in Genesee is with us now. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Hey, like you, I also have four children. I do not have another one on the way. But we thought about homeschooling our children. My question is, how do you keep your kids focused at home to do schoolwork while they know right outside the playground is out there, the basketball hoop is out there, the ATVs are out there to ride? How do you keep your kids focused in the house knowing that right outside the window is playtime?
Well, congratulations on your fifth. We're expecting our fifth child, too. The issue of focus is so important. I'm so glad you brought that up, because part of what you gain from homeschooling is a certain type of loving respect from your children and obedience that's based on practical wisdom, not on some sort of fear. And so our kids know that there is no going outside to play or doing any of their other activities that they like until their work is done. And if they are having trouble focusing, I actually put them in my bedroom on a small folding table and a chair where there's no distraction and the window shades are down until they can finish their current thing they're struggling with, and then I allow them to come back out to the kitchen table where we do most of our work.
Hey, when you don't belong to a school district and your kids want to do after school activities like swimming and running and stuff like that, are you allowed to just go into any school district and sign up for activities after school?
You know, this varies widely depending on state and district. And I do say in my post, item number 5 is that you can use whatever public school services you like, which is fortunately true for me here in St. Louis. But I understand that, I've been educated through the comments on this post and speaking to many people after I wrote it, that that's really very district specific. So our kids actually are permitted to sign up for whatever public school-sponsored activities they may choose to do. If they want to be in a chess club, on sports teams, They can do all of that. One of my children receives speech therapy through the public school system. So we really do have access to whatever services we want. We're still taxpayers, and that's the philosophy of this district.
Yeah. I'm not absolutely positive, but I think I did read on the Wisconsin homeschooling page that the Wisconsin Homeschooling Organization is not fighting for that, privilege. I don't know if I want to call it a privilege or not, because there is a concern that the more public school services a homeschooler would take, the more threat of regulation.
Right. And so this issue of regulation is very, very important. And homeschoolers find regulation very threatening, unbelievably threatening. You know, I know very educated, reasonable people that are terrified to register their kids as homeschoolers. My kids are registered. This is super controversial, whether or not homeschoolers should be registered as homeschooled children with the public school system. My children are registered, in particular because we do receive those services through the public school system. But I know so many educated, reasonable people that say, no, don't ever register your children, because somebody's going to come and audit your homeschooling and notice that once in the past year you forgot to log your hours that day, and they're going to tell you that if you don't put your kids in public school, the Department of Family Services is going to take your children away. That fear is really very prevalent. And homeschoolers are doing everything they can to block regulation. I should make it clear that America as a country has already done the experiment of whether or not regulation of homeschooling works. We have every state has a different laws regarding regulation. And one thing is clear, that there's no difference in academic achievement and educational outcome among homeschooled students from highly regulated states when compared to lower regulated states. So in my opinion, regulation is really a very poor use of taxpayer dollars. I don't think it improves educational outcome, and I think there are much better ways we can use our tax money.
Yeah. And you say in your post, one of the reasons why you're doing this is that your kids are excelling academically.
Absolutely. In fact, so much more than they ever did in their public or their private school. And that's really because of the individual attention they get. No classroom teacher, no matter how well-trained and no matter how committed they are to education, can give your child the one-on-one education that homeschooling provides. In particular, is our ability to encourage effort. You know, if my kids came home with sloppy work or incomplete work, it's very hard for the teacher to really push them to repeat that or to remediate it, especially if their work is already at or above average. And that was really what was happening with one of my children. I felt that he could accomplish so much more, and he was just doing average work. And the teacher's not, most teachers really aren't going to push them much harder. But at home, if their work is less than what they're capable of, my husband and I expect them to repeat it.
Let's take another call from David in Appleton. Hello, David.
Yeah, hi. I am a substitute teacher in three districts, so I see a lot of different, methods. And I agree, homeschooling I could do in three and a half hours what's done in a typical school day. If you look at a school day from, let's say, 7:30 to 3 or 3:30, and I'm not saying homeschool's for everybody. For me, it wouldn't work because I don't think I could get my kids to cooperate very well in that environment. I think they need an outside adult to keep them on task. But I believe you can do very well with homeschooling. And in our school district in Appleton, you have various online e-school type of things that can supplement. So those work very well, and I know quite a few people that supplement their homeschooling with e-school.
Yeah. I thought, David, that you thought that maybe homeschooling would be too hard for most parents.
No, it's not too hard. I think it's very easy. Before I became a teacher, I thought it would be very difficult. But in fact, I think it's very easy.
Okay.
For several reasons. But it's getting your children to cooperate. I mean, any parent of a teenager knows the last place the teenager wants to be is with their parent. And so to get them to cooperate in that environment can be difficult.
Thank you very much, David. And you do have one of your posts is homeschooling is not hard, it's fun. Dr.
That's right. And I so many parents worry that they're not capable academically of teaching, which is not quite what David's saying, but I think that's a fear, and it was certainly one of my fears going into homeschooling. But actually, guess what? You know, I'm an MD. I have many years of education behind me, and I am capable of teaching my children how to read. And there's so much literature out there. We bought a box school curriculum that goes step-by-step, teaching phonics, etc., and it's just not hard to figure this stuff out. And yes, I think a school teacher with their many years of training may have a little bit more knowledge than I do, or even a lot more knowledge about different learning styles and adaptive learning, et cetera. But what I lack in that training, I make up with my individualized attention.
Our guest is Dr. Kathleen Birchelman. She is a pediatrician at the St. Louis Children's Hospital at Washington University School of Medicine. We are talking with her about a recent blog post that she wrote for the blog that she co-founded, childrensmomdocs.org. It's a pediatrics blog affiliated with the St. Louis Children's Hospital. It's on the 18 reasons why doctors and lawyers homeschool their children and why she and her husband have joined what she calls America's fastest-growing educational trend. And we're wondering what you think, what questions you have. Do you homeschool your children? Why or why not? Do you think that homeschooling is a good idea? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking this hour with a physician who is also a homeschooler. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, April 1st. We are talking about why, our guest says, more doctors and lawyers and other professionals are homeschooling their children and why she and her husband decided to homeschool too. And we're welcoming your questions and your reactions and wondering if you do or don't homeschool your children and why or why not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Kathleen Birchelman, a pediatrician at the St. Louis Children's Hospital at Washington University School of Medicine. Her recent blog post, 18 Reasons Why Doctors and Lawyers Homeschool Their Children, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Dr. Birchelman, I had mentioned in our first half hour that I thought that most doctors and lawyers and others, if they were not completely satisfied with the public school system, would send their kids to private schools. Why did you decide not to send your kids to private schools?
Well, we did. We tried private school for a year. And ultimately, we felt that homeschooling would provide our kids with a better academic education. And in particular, also in addition to the academics and the better one-on-one attention, that homeschooling would give our kids more free time to pursue their own interests and just to have free creative playtime. You know, I'm a pediatrician, and I've looked so much into this research about creative play and how incredibly important it is, especially to younger children. And it bothered me so much that my kids, once they were 5 years old and in kindergarten, would get home from school between 4 and 4:30, and then I had about 3 to 4 hours with them in the evening to do dinner, bath, bed, any extracurriculars, homework, and their chores. And that left no time for free play. There's very little time to run outside in the backyard or play in the woods or build a fort, and that creative play is so important for neurologic development. And it just felt wrong to have my kids so scheduled.
Elizabeth on Facebook writes, my kids went to public schools, but I also homeschooled them on days off. We did trips to museums and theaters, especially for Shakespeare. We kept going through the summer with math and reading and history and natural sciences. They have a love of learning to this day as young adults. So she didn't do it full time, but she did it part time.
You know, that's how I started, too, actually. Mm. You know, I love being a mom, and I'm not afraid to say that. I did the same thing through the summers and on days off and on school vacations, and I loved it. And that's part of what really convinced me that homeschooling would be great for our family.
You also note on the blog, though, that private schools for a large family is too expensive.
That's true, and most people say, you're a doctor. Can't you afford to send your kids to private school? And the answer is probably yes. It depends on what you call afford. But we have to recognize that in our current financial atmosphere, that families have a lot of choices. Are you going to save for college? Are you going to save for retirement? Or are you going to choose to pay private school tuition? Very few families can afford all three, especially if they have four or five children, as we do. And then there's this issue of educational debt. So as educational debt of the parents rise, and you haven't paid off that debt until your kids are already school-aged, that further increases financial stress.
Our next caller is Carl in Beaver Dam. Hello, Carl.
Good morning. I had several thoughts on the subject, but two that kind of came up, they're interrelated, is the guest mentioned math and reading, and what about other subjects like, for instance, history? And also, you know, tied into this is there's no other peers for the children. So I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, so they learn a lot from their classmates, and their classmates might be from different cultures. So how is that dealt with in a homeschooling environment? And back to the history, what I was getting at is there's different views of presenting history depending on, obviously, the teachers, their viewpoints on the subject. So,
Dr. Birchelman, you were concerned about socializing of your children being exposed to other kids and learning from their classmates.
Absolutely, and that really was my last hang-up about getting into homeschooling. I really felt that my kids needed that socialization, and that's perhaps the biggest stereotype associated with homeschooling, that homeschooled children really need that constant interaction with other children of the same age group to develop normal social skills. And the research does not support it. So, you know, I'm a physician, and I like to think about things analytically and from an evidence-based research perspective. And there's a lot of work about homeschooled children and socialization. And consistently, the data shows that homeschooled children do very well socially. There's a great website about this called finehomeschooling.com that has several pages summarizing the research on homeschooling children and their socialization. And for anybody with questions on that, I highly recommend finehomeschooling.com. But the homeschooled children on many levels of social skills, everyday living, interaction with peers, et cetera, consistently outperform children who attend public school. Now, why is that? Well, our children spend a lot of time with their peers. In fact, we have to cut down on our extracurricular activities, if you will, so that we can get our work done. Our kids go to homeschool co-op one day a week, and they're also involved in sports and scouts and religious education and music lessons and choir. In fact, it goes on. And these are the kind of enrichment activities that just weren't possible scheduling-wise when our kids were in school. And so they get so much time with their peers. That's the least of my concerns.
Scott on Facebook writes, nobody ever asks college students about the homeschool kids they know. My experience was that homeschool kids had huge gaps in their education and were socially awkward and were naive about how the world works. You want to comment on that?
Sure. That's an interesting individual perspective. I can tell you what the research shows, which is that homeschooled students, when they go to college, do very well academically. In fact, homeschooled students have higher average GPAs in college as both freshmen and seniors when compared to students who attended public, private, and parochial schools. So they outperform schooled students in terms of GPA, as well as in terms of their SAT scores. And the SAT score data comes from the College Board. Homeschooled students also have a higher college graduation rate than their peers. And as for the social awkwardness, I think that's a very individual perspective. Mm-hmm. Because, again, the data shows that homeschooled children do better than children who attended public schools on scales regarding communication, daily living, socialization, and maturity.
We had a caller who couldn't wait who wondered how colleges decide if they will accept a student who's been homeschooled.
You know, homeschooled children are now being specifically recruited to colleges. It's very interesting. I think the colleges have finally figured out that homeschooling really provides children with unique opportunities, and that they're going to bring that diversity in their education and life experience to the schools.
Let's take another call from Annalisa in Green Bay. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions. First of all, I wonder if you have household help because you have this full-time career and you're homeschooling four children. And then secondly, I'm interested in the role that your husband plays in this endeavor. And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that wonderful question. Most people, that's the most common question I've gotten is, how do I actually do it? There's actually an addendum at the bottom of my blog that I added that goes through all the details of our day-to-day schedule and how we logistically pull it off. But my husband does do about 50% of our homeschooling, and our family is not alone in that. There are tons of homeschooling dads out there, and even if the dad is not doing the playing the major homeschooling role, every homeschooling family works as a team, and every dad of a homeschooled family does play a significant role in their children's education, even if that means more time spent on field trips or evening activities or evening reading with their children, et cetera. And most of the dads really love it.
Yeah. What about topics like, we had one caller bring up history, what about topics like science? And I know that there are people with deep religious beliefs that don't believe in evolution but believe more in creationism. Is that something you can just choose to teach your child?
You know, it's a great question because it brings up, again, this issue of regulation. You know, our private and parochial schools are not regulated by our government regarding curriculum choice. So if your concern regarding homeschooling is curriculum choice, you should be equally concerned with our entire private and parochial school systems. But regarding curriculum choice, it is really up to the parents to a certain degree, and every state has different degrees of regulation. But I think there's two points. The first is that we get into a very dangerous, slippery slope once we start trying to tell parents what they are and are not allowed to teach their children. The second is that our U.S. government really needs to develop a positive relationship with homeschoolers. There's this fear, I find, between government regulation and homeschooling, and the homeschoolers feel really underappreciated and misunderstood. You know, homeschoolers are turning out well-educated, responsible U.S. citizens who are the future innovators of our society. And they do it at a fraction of the cost of schooling, and they do it without federal support or state support, saving U.S. taxpayers an estimated $16 billion every year. So homeschoolers provide an awesome service and asset to our country, and I think our government needs to develop a positive relationship with homeschoolers rather than this sort of fear about regulation that currently exists.
Well, we just have a minute or so to go. What is the takeaway that you hope listeners will take away from this hour, or readers will take away from your blog?
You know, I want people to understand that homeschooling is an excellent educational opportunity and that almost every family can do it. My blog is focused on, you know, this faction of the upper middle class that traditionally would have sent their kids to private schools that are now considering homeschooling in growing numbers. But it's important to note that I know families homeschooling on as little as $30,000 to $40,000, and I had one person write in and tell me that she's homeschooling her two children on a $30,000 a year annual salary. And homeschooling really is accessible to almost everyone, and it's a great educational option. And the stereotypes associated with homeschooling that homeschoolers are ideologues, that they have extreme ideologies they wish to, quote-unquote, indoctrinate their children with, these are just not true.
Well, good luck to you, and congratulations on child number five on the way.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Joy, for having me today.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Dr. Kathleen Birchelman is a pediatrician at St. Louis Children's Hospital at Washington University School of Medicine. Her recent blog piece, 18 Reasons Why Doctors and Lawyers Homeschool Their Children, is available at childrensmomdocs.org, and it's also linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's time for our Monday morning wake-up call. After this break, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. President Obama last week signed what critics have dubbed the Monsanto Protection Act. The provision, tucked in an agricultural appropriations bill, allows the planting, harvest, and sale of genetically engineered crops, even if a court rules they were not properly approved. We will talk with a guest about this provision in today's Monday morning wake-up call. And if you have a question or a reaction, we may have time for that, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Mark Castell is co-director and senior farm policy analyst at the Cornucopia Institute, a farm policy research group based in Cornucopia, Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So can you explain this so-called Monsanto Protection Act?
Well, it really is a wake-up call, and it's a subversion of democracy. So I'll explain it, but it's a great example for other abuses of this nature. Joy, I hate to say it because I don't want to sound reactionary, but I've been using the F word a lot lately.
Uh-oh, what is? I hope that's not the F word I'm thinking of.
Fascism. I don't know if that was the word you were thinking of.
No, it wasn't.
You know, we've got an environment now where, even though in the last poll that I saw done by Reuters, 92% of the U.S. population would like to see genetically engineered foods labeled. So at least they want a choice. So it's really representative of some widespread concerns. We have a major corporation in the case of Monsanto and a very powerful biotechnology lobby. So whether it's Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, we've got a multi-billion dollar industry that's really bought favor in Congress. And this wasn't just an appropriations bill. This was the continuing resolution. This was the great bargain to continue our government without another threat of shutdown. So what these insidious riders to appropriation bills do is they attach themselves to legislation that are must-pass pieces of congressional action. So once you've got this threat to shut down the government, you can stick in any kind of incremental piece of legislation, no matter how objectionable it might be to your constituency, and you're really not going to be able to vote against it. And that's what happened in this case. They're not going to shut down the government because of one objectionable piece, although this is just one of many.
Yeah. So what happened is that this rider was put into this agricultural bill, and the president signed it. Otherwise, it would have shut down services that would have benefited agriculture.
Well, it would have shut down the entire federal government.
Mm-hmm.
This is the continuing resolution for keeping the government open for business. So, and specifically, what this rider does. And this is really another questionable action by Congress, is it
supersedes the judiciary. Can't say it that this early in the morning, but the Constitution created the separation of powers and equal power between the executive branch, the judicial branch, and the legislative branch. And what they're basically saying is that even if a court finds that the approval process for a genetically engineered crop was done illegally and tries to enjoin the company from releasing a product commercially, this law supersedes that and doesn't allow the court to stop the introduction. And what's so dangerous about genetically engineered organisms in our environment, be they fish like the new genetically engineered salmon from Aqua Bounty, or genetically engineered alfalfa, which the Cornucopia Institute was a party of successfully suing the government to delay its release. Once we release these genes into the environment, and they have the potential to cross with, in the case of salmon, wild salmon stocks, or in the case of alfalfa with other non-GMO alfalfa, we might never be able to turn that around. We can't recall the genes once they're out in the environment. So superseding the power of the court here is really dangerous and could cause permanent damage not only to the environment but to human health.
Well, I get it. So, what the supporters of such a thing? Why would they put such a rider into a continuing resolution bill?
Well, that's why I use the F word, because in this case, this bill, this rider to the appropriation bill, never got a committee hearing, never got a separate vote in Congress. No one was able to talk about it. There were some amendments that would have removed it. Senator John Tester from Montana, who happens to be an organic farmer, put an amendment in there, and his amendment wasn't considered. So this is just raw power by the corporate sector that has really taken over the critical thinking of many of our legislators.
Is it too late to do anything then?
It's too late right now. Now, the only bit of good news is this continuing resolution and this rider will only have legal effect until the end of the fiscal year. So there will be a real concerted organizing attempt, I believe, to make sure that legislators know that they shouldn't renew this power.
So it would run out in 6 months, and it doesn't have to be included in the next one.
It doesn't have to be. We'll see what the new budget deliberations look like.
Yeah. And if the so-called Monsanto Protection Act stays with us, what is your greatest fear?
Well, my greatest fear is that, and even in the next 6 months, that they will release cultivars or new life forms that, as an example, we sued the USDA to prevent the release of genetically engineered alfalfa before an environmental impact statement could be performed. It was the first time one was required, and it took the courts to do it. And that's because of the widespread implications. Genetically engineered alfalfa is pollinated by insects, and those pesky little critters just will not respect our fence lines and our property lines, so they could pollinate and contaminate all the alfalfa. And it took the courts to intervene. I sincerely think that there'll be a constitutional challenge, legal challenge, to this provision because of the separation of powers violation. But again, the amount of time that takes to work its way through, possibly to the Supreme Court, means we could have a lot of new GE crops that may or may not be safe.
Well, we will spend more time on this issue in the future. Thanks very much for being with us.
You bet, Joy. Bye-bye.
Mark Castell is co-director, senior farm policy analyst at the Cornucopia Institute, a farm policy research group based in Cornucopia, Wisconsin. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Amanda Magnus for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.